Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. WFHB is your award-winning community radio station. For over 27 years, it's been where you found the many voices of our amazing volunteers, your friends, and neighbors. WFHB has been sharing and caring, informing and entertaining, supporting the arts and the best things in our community, in good times and in not so good ones too. If you're one of the many people who see WFHB as an essential part of life here in South Central Indiana, we hope you'll support us, especially now, by going online to WFHB.org and clicking on the big red donate button. We need you and appreciate you.
Hey, everybody, this is Inside Outdoors. Welcome to the show this morning.
Hey.
And I'm here with Rich Reardon and Alan Bronberg. How you doing, boys?
Doing well.
Top of the morning.
Top of the morning, yes. At 7 o'clock, sure comes early, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Don't we wish.
We have a few topics to discuss this morning and hopefully to amuse you. Rich and I were talking before the show, wishing that we were back in the studio,
yeah,
where we could accept phone calls again. I would sure like that a lot. And anyway, we're not. So you'll just have to accept what we've got.
Right.
And what we've got today is a beautiful day, even though it is a little cool here in Bloomington, Indiana. It's 47 on my thermometer here at home. We're doing this remotely now, as you must have all guessed by now.
Yeah, and it has warmed up a little bit from the last few days. Of course, today is Wednesday when we're recording this, but I think by Saturday it should be even a little bit warmer, but maybe not.
Yeah, it said 28 degrees here this morning when I got up. That was a little colder than I was ready for.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hit that a couple of times in the last week or so.
Yeah.
I had 31, but I got up a little late this morning.
Yeah.
Well, the forecast here says 54 degrees and cloudy on Saturday. So, you know, probably about the same.
Well, why don't you, if you got those Lake Monroe reports ready there, Rich?
Yeah, the lake level is 537. Since last week, it's gone down a little bit to 51.6 degrees.
Well, that's getting chilly.
Yep.
Too cold for skinny dipping.
Yeah, we were talking about that last week. So the lake's most likely turned over, and everything's a little different. The fishing has slowed down, and now we're into hunting season.
Yes, we're... We've had two state park weekend hunts already. We've got a couple more of those to go.
Right.
And then we have the real season, you know, the gun season
mm-hmm.
is coming right up. Is that this weekend or was it last weekend that that started?
I think it was last weekend. Brown County was one of them. And I think the weekend of the 30th and the 1st is the second.
Yes, yes. When does the regular gun season start, Rich?
Regular gun season started already on November 14th.
That's what I thought, yeah.
It runs from the 14th through the 29th, and then muzzleloader comes in after that from December 5th through December 20th, and special antlerless is December 26th to January 3rd. And archery has been in since October 1st, and all the youth stuff and everything else is over. The reduction zone stuff will be going on until January 31st. So,
well, I've seen that there's been a lot of guys getting hurt falling out of tree stands this year.
I noticed that.
And one of the most unusual ones, this isn't a tree stand story, but it's the most recent thing I got from the DNR on this.
Mm-hmm.
Their headline on this is Dillsboro. You know where Dillsboro is? I don't.
No, I don't.
Dillsboro man impaled by antlers during ORV accident. Mm. Ohio County, which I assume is over near Ohio.
Right.
And it says, here we go. Indiana conservation officers are investigating an off-road vehicle accident that resulted in the operator being airlifted with serious injuries. At about 2 p.m., responders dispatched to 11,000 block of South Fork Road in Dillsboro, Indiana, regarding a hunter who was involved in a rollover accident. Earl Hagee, 63 years old, of Dillsboro, was airlifted from the scene and flown to University of Cincinnati Hospital. Hagee was retrieving a harvested antlered deer from the bottom of a steep incline where he had been hunting. After securing the deer to the rear of his ORV, he attempted to navigate back up the steep incline, but the ORV rolled over backwards, throwing him from the vehicle.
Ouch.
As a result, Hagee was impaled in the right side of his torso by the antlers of the deer. Responding agencies include Indiana DNR, Ohio County Sheriff's Department, Rising Sun. Oh, it's during Rising Sun. Well, we know where that is. Bear Branch Fire Department and Rising Sun EMS. So they had plenty of people there to help him out. I got to say something about this accident. There was, you know, something just very similar to this happened out in Montana, I don't know, 10 years ago, but resulted in the death of two guys. They were taking batteries up to service a television relay station at the top of a mountain there.
Mm.
And they had to go up, but there's a steep incline up to where the tower is. And they had it, they were in a Jeep, which they had driven up there many times in this Jeep, but not with these heavy batteries in the back. And that's what happened with this guy in Dillsboro County the other day. There was so much weight on the back of the Jeep that as they started up the steep grade, it pushed the rear of the Jeep down and it just went over backwards and they fell like 5,000 feet, killed them both of them. The Jeep was mangled into a little ball of iron. So, you know, when you're in an ORV or a Jeep, any short wheelbase vehicle, you cannot put any weight in the back of that and expect to go up any kind of incline.
Right.
Safely. So that's what happened to this poor fellow. There's no update on how he might be, but if he got stuck by some antlers, it's probably not good. You know, who knows what it punctured.
Yeah.
There's no telling. So anyway, that was the number one accident report I had, most recent one I had from the DNR. Then I've got one here from the second most recent one, this start of this week. A West Point man injured in tree stand fall. Gee, we heard that before.
Yeah.
Investigating accident that occurred last Sunday. At 9:40 a.m., Tippecanoe County Dispatch received a call from a man who had fallen from his tree stand out in the country somewhere. Blake Hall, 39, of West Point, was climbing down from a lock on tree stand, when the strap securing the climbing sticks to the tree broke, causing him to fall 20 feet. He was wearing a full body harness, but was not attached to a safety line at the time of the incident. Hall suffered a broken arm and spinal injuries as a result, and was taken to St. Vincent's in Indianapolis. Conservation officers want to remind Hoosiers that the most common injuries during deer seasons are accidents involving tree stands and other elevated platforms. You're urged to wear a full body safety harness when ascending or descending these platforms, but you got to hook it up. Okay.
Right.
All right. So that there's the first tree stand fall report. Here we got another one. This was in Aurora. You know where Aurora is? That's in Dearborn County.
Yeah.
In conservation investigating elevated hunting equipment fall. The afternoon, responders dispatched to North Hogan Road near Aurora regarding a hunter who fell 23 feet while attempting to hang or remove his tree stand. Lewis Gehring, 60, of Aurora, was airlifted from the scene to University of Cincinnati. They got two tree stand guys in there, or two hunting accident guys from Indiana. He sustained severe injuries in both legs with possible internal injuries. Cause not known, but he was not wearing a full body harness at the time of the fall. So that was the third hunting accident from an elevated tree stand in District 9 in 3 weeks. So that's down our way. The next one we got here, Osgood Man. Here we go. Osgood Man airlifted after falling from tree stand in Ripley County. That's over by Friendship, where the muzzleloader chute is. Conservation officers investigating tree stand fall yesterday afternoon. 5:30 p.m. dispatched to West County Road 600 near Osgood. Guy fell 21 feet from elevated tree stand. 22-year-old man initially treated at the scene and then airlifted to Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis. Injuries unknown at this time. Cause of the fall is under investigation. He was not wearing a full body harness at the time of the fall. Common thread running through these stories, I can see. Let's see what else we got here. Here's the first one I got, actually. This was back on the 1st of November. Hunter airlifted after tree stand fall in Jennings County. Dispatched to North County Road, et cetera, in Jennings County to a guy who fell 14 feet from an elevated tree stand. John Connor, 39, of Bristol, Vermont. What's he doing here? Was initially treated on the scene and subsequently airlifted to St. Vincent's in Indianapolis with a serious back injury. Initial investigation revealed that ropes securing the saddle-style tree stand to the tree became loose, causing Connor to fall to the ground. Responding agencies, et cetera, et cetera. Indiana ICOs encourage all who are hunting from elevated position to utilize a safety harness and lifeline. Check all tree stands and straps before climbing or coming down, for that matter. Let's see. I believe that's it on those. There was one other story we had here about. Oh yeah, here we go. You may have heard this already. I haven't been around for a while, so I don't know. Swiss City man arrested for timber theft. Have you heard this?
No, I didn't.
Okay, Green County. Indiana Conservation arrested Swiss City man after he bought timber without a license from multiple Lawrence County and Green County landowners between 2016 and 2019. The landowners failed to receive payment for their timber. Alfred Barnes, age 65, of Swiss City, was arrested after conservation officers served in search warrants on Barnes at his Greene County business. COs began their investigation in 2016 after receiving info that Barnes had illegally bought timber without a license from at least seven Greene County landowners. They also investigated complaints in Lawrence County and discovered several landowners there had also sold timber to Barnes, and some of those landowners had failed to receive a payment. Here's the following charges. He's got one count, corrupt business influence, level 5 felony, two separate counts, theft, level 6 felony, one count, unlicensed timber buying without a license, level 6 felony. In Greene County, seven separate counts, buying timber without a license with a prior conviction, level 6 felony. Barnes was taken into custody, booked into the Greene County Jail. Orders for forfeiture of equipment and vehicles were also granted in relation to the Lawrence County investigation. So you got to have a license to buy trees, boys.
Yeah.
This guy sounds like a repeat offender. I don't know this man. I know a lot of people over there, but I don't know him. And I don't know what the current status of this case is. But in any case, there's the case.
Yeah.
And luckily, that's all the tree stand falls that I have for today. That's enough, don't you think?
Well, I looked up Dillsboro, the first one, and that's... it's near Friendship. It's on 50, right after you leave the river area. So it's pretty close to Ohio and Cincinnati. That's probably why they sent him over to Cincinnati. But it's before you get to North Vernon and all that. You know, it's kind of about a third of the way into the state.
I suspect that most of our outdoor listeners probably know where Friendship is because. Mm-hmm. That's where they have the muzzle loading rendezvous.
Right.
I used to. I don't know whether they still have it or not. It was a big deal over there and brought a lot of people to Ripley County, which is sparsely populated. Sparsely.
And then the other one you said was Switzerland or?
Oh, Swiss City?
Swiss City.
That was the tree timber guy.
Oh, okay.
And. Let's see what else.
Aurora's down by Lawrenceburg.
Yes, right. Yes, and well, whatever. One of them's near Rising Sun, which is right on the river.
Yep.
And it's a nice part of Indiana. There's loaded with deer down there, so I'm not too surprised that there's a guy from Vermont down there hunting deer. Frankly, because right. I suspect we have more deer than Vermont, although maybe not. You never know.
Well, you know, and besides the fact of, you know. Possibly getting killed or really hurting yourself, it can be expensive if you just in general to hurt yourself. If you get airlifted, that's like a $5,000 taxi ride just to start with.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually more like a $20,000 taxi ride.
Yeah, and probably.
No more than $5,000. So you're looking at a balance billing on your insurance in addition to your injuries. Of you know anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000,
right?
So it's not cheap to get airlifted anywhere.
No.
Well, there's nothing attached to anything to do with medical services
right.
That is cheap. It's all expensive.
It is.
I could testify. I know you can too, Alan.
Yep.
I just had a buddy. By the way, I want to make a shout out. To my friend Tony Abril over in Worthington, Indiana, who just went in and had a major surgery in his gut. And he's at the VA hospital in Indianapolis. He was in there from 8:30 yesterday morning till 4:30 yesterday afternoon. And the lady who operated on him, Dr. Seppa, is the same woman who operated on me about a year and a half ago. She's a Vietnamese born. She's the one that escaped on the last helicopter out of Saigon with her parents and grandparents.
I'll be darned.
And, came to the United States as a baby, or not the United States, came, landed in Canada, worked their way across Canada to Montreal, and eventually got entrance into the United States. They moved to North Carolina, where she eventually went to the Duke University School of Medicine and became a surgeon. And she's now one of the top surgeons in Indianapolis for thoracic surgery.
And she is indeed.
She's just a wonderfully nice person. She's only about 4'10". She has these tiny little hands, which I understand came in handy for Tony's operation, because they couldn't get the various things in there. They had to, so she reached in with her hands and did it. So here's give her a hand, Dr. Seppa in Indianapolis. And good luck to Tony. We hope he pulls through okay.
For sure.
Yeah, so got anybody else have anybody in the hospital they want to mention? Go over. This is the time to
there's plenty of people going in these days, that's for sure.
Well, I've heard that the virus rate seems to be escalating terribly in Indiana.
Well, it's exploding.
Hello.
I had a friend pass away this week, young guy.
Oh.
And I wonder whether it has anything to do with that, although he had a massive heart attack. He just stood up, was watching a movie, couldn't save him, just fell down, that was it. And he wasn't sick, he didn't have a history of any of that. I don't know whether sometimes you look into the family history and you'll see, you know, that they genetically they have a problem, but at any rate, I just hope it didn't have anything to do with the COVID. Sometimes you don't know you have it, and it's one of the things they say is the heart problems can be exacerbated by it. So, of course, just about anything, really, once you get over 50. But anyway, so his name is John Coveney, and it's not really a shout-out, but I certainly feel terrible about it. So do a lot of my friends. So
it was R.I.P., John.
Tough work.
The more time goes by and the more we understand about what's going on with this COVID, the downstream effects are pretty far reaching and wide. There are GI problems. There are problems with blood coagulation, the cardiovascular problems, and of course the respiratory problems. But they're quirky problems. There are things that if COVID, you know, wasn't raging, you might not associate that with them. But the more this goes on, the more we're finding, is going wrong with people down the road, whether they've had light cases, heavy cases, almost died, didn't have any symptoms. That doesn't seem to matter. And it's pretty clear this virus is doing things to individuals' immune system that is going to take us quite a while to run down, what they are, who's getting them, and, you know, are they permanent, and what do we do to help them? Because none of the usual anticoagulants are working to stop this coagulation problem that was caused by the COVID virus. So it's a whole medical science unto itself, chasing down the corollary diseases that are coming from this COVID thing.
Yeah.
I talked with my friend Jeffrey Stoddard, who's a research doctor for Johnson & Johnson. He's working on their vaccine, which they are near finishing, by the way.
Right.
And we mentioned it, and we talked about a couple of cases that we both know about, and one of them is a friend of mine who lives here in Monroe County. He came down with the coronavirus, didn't know it, had no symptoms until something went wrong with one of his eyes. Yeah. And no doctors had any idea. This was months ago. So nobody had any idea about this extracurricular activity that the coronavirus causes.
Yep.
And then suddenly out of the blue, he started having atrial fibrillation. His heart started beating 145 beats a minute.
Hmm.
And did that for 2 or 3 months. And finally, he found a doctor who would at least listen to him. And they had, other doctors had tried typical treatments, giving them beta blockers and whatnot to try to regulate his heart. But they ended up giving him some other kind of medicine. I don't recall what it was, but bang, it went away just like that. The beta blockers had slowed his heart rate down a little, but when they gave him these shots, it disappeared. And he seems to be fine now, although who knows? Jeff Stoddard, my doc buddy, says that it's kind of, in some ways, like Lyme disease, in that it secretes itself in every part of your body. And to find out where it is, you almost have to die, you know? And I don't, it's diabolical is all you can say. And boy, you don't want to get it. And I keep seeing people without masks going into stores. And I know that's a problem across the country and places like North Dakota, where the governor, you know, is just giving coronavirus a ticket to ride. And I, you know, Wisconsin's have 35% positive test rate on going on up there. 35%, that's one out of three people.
That's pretty shocking.
That's incredible. It's pretty scary going into the what's really just now starting to be the flu season. I guess anytime is flu season for COVID. We're going to find out what winter is like for it coming right up.
Yeah. It's not going to be good unless, you know, everybody comes to some understanding that we can't keep doing what we're doing and somebody's got to behave a little differently. I mean, that's what it just boils down to. I see the same thing you do, Don, Rich, people all over this city and county, no masks, right. You know, and seem to not be at all concerned that they're out in the middle of this epidemic. It's shocking. I mean, it goes beyond just lack of knowledge. I mean,
oh, definitely, it's political.
Yeah, it absolutely.
It absolutely is political.
Yeah, nobody in their right mind would do this if there were just a disagreement about just how effective masks are and things like that, because that argument would get knocked down in about a nanosecond.
Well, you got to blame the president for this, because he has urged these people on to retain their quote unquote freedom to not wear a mask. Now, what kind of sense is that? And it's just infuriating. And if this was on the TV show Law and Order, he would be charged with disregard of life.
Yeah.
Murder by disregard of life. Just incredible.
Well, there's no downside to wearing a mask for anybody. So, I mean, I think that's the whole deal. I mean, if there was some, you know, major downside that you could put a percentage of bad things that could happen to you from wearing a mask, it might give you a little pause, probably not for very long, but a little pause. You might have some leg to stand on to say, well, I just don't want to do that. There's no downside, none, not any.
No, the only downside is it might be a little uncomfortable. You know, what can't you stand a little uncomfortable uncomfort to save your life? I guess not. I guess not. Depending on who you are and where you live and what political philosophy you follow.
It's beyond anything that's just reasonable. I'm just blown away. And I see, you know, people, sick people in the hospital, you know, we're starting to get really busy on the weekends when I put my pharmacy shifts in. There are just people flooding these hospitals now that weren't 3-4 weeks ago. I mean, the corner's been turned. The time has, you know, kind of taken its way with the development of the virus in people now. Who didn't think it was going to happen to him before, and it's starting to show up. North Dakota is shocking.
South Dakota.
Yeah, right. I mean, you literally have to try to get close enough to somebody in South Dakota to get infected. There just aren't that many people there.
Right,
that's right.
You're living in New York high rises in South Dakota. I mean, you really have to try. And it looks like they did.
Yes, I'd say you're right.
Oh, well. Well, it's coming up on Thanksgiving, and everyone in my family have talked about this, that we're just, you know, we'd rather be here next year and give up something this year, you know, and especially, you know, I've got an 87-year-old mother. We do have plans to see each other at Christmas, and but we're going about this in a very deep and deep way. In other words, that everyone's getting tested. We're just going to my sister's house. My mom is in a assisted living right now, and so I cannot visit her because I can't go in there at all.
Right, right.
My sister can, but she has to get constantly tested. So we're getting tested. It's just going to be my mom and, you know, just a couple of us, that, and everybody will be tested first. And at that point, the real reason that I'm doing it is that I want to see my mom. You know,
well, of course you do.
There's other issues, you know, with I work for a elderly care center here in Indiana. I do some web work for them and stuff, and it's really terrible when you know, they can't have any touch, they can't be with people anymore, and they, you know, you know, when you're younger, Zoom and everything's kind of okay, but when it gets to the point where that might be the last time you see them, I think that you have to do, you know, you have to go a little beyond it. But that's like extenuating circumstances as far as Thanksgiving and just generally everybody getting together and sharing a meal and sitting at the same table. That's just something that you just can't do in any right now. It's just stupid.
Right. Well, my wife and I are not going to Thanksgiving with her children and grandchildren this year, and we're not going to Thanksgiving with our neighbors down the street, and which we've done for, I don't know how many, you know, 20, 30 years.
Right.
And it's a bad situation. I don't know what to say. If my parents were still alive, I would really be worried about them.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
Where's your mother, in Pennsylvania?
No, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yeah, Raleigh.
Well, see, that's what makes it all difficult. You know, I have children in L.A. and children in Minnesota and grandchildren, and, you know, it's the travel that is the problem. You know, I think that there's a couple things that get missed in the, you know, rush to be cautious, and I'm of that mind that we should be doing that. However, there are safe ways to get together for people who don't use air travel, bus travel, whatever, who are just in the local neighborhood. It probably is safe to go visit your neighbors as long as you're wearing masks. You can sit a few feet from one another. You know, part of the problem with all of these guidelines is that we're designing them for the least responsible people in society.
Right.
And that's what makes it difficult. You know, we could probably go have Thanksgiving with our neighbors. We can do it responsibly. We're adults. Done. We're responsible. We can do that. You know, we know how to do it, but not everybody does. Everybody gets together with 30 people in a house, no masks, nothing.
Right.
Problems are going to happen. So, you know, how do you manage that? Well, I don't think it's manageable. I think everybody has to just use their own sense and try to make yourself, you know, as safe as you can be. And look, it's random chance. It's, you know, it's dumb luck as to whether there's going to be viruses where you are or not. And if you've taken all the precautions you can take, then you're probably going to be okay. If you're just doing stupid stuff, then you're probably not going to be okay. But we don't know who.
I think that's a good way to approach it. You're right, Alan. You're absolutely right.
Too bad.
Common sense goes a long way, but we do have that random thing here. Not unlike being in a war where you never know where the next bullet's going to hit.
Exactly.
And,
so.
That's Same pretty thing. Much what's going on here.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Well, and then you've got, like you were bringing up about Trump, his advisor, Scott Atlas, said today that he was telling seniors that they shouldn't going on TV to say, shouldn't worry about getting COVID on Thanksgiving, because for a lot of you, it's your final Thanksgiving anyway. I mean, can you believe that? It's like, what?
I can't believe it.
What are we doing?
What? It's almost, you have to say, well, gee, I kind of expected that.
Yeah.
What else stupid can they tell us?
Unbelievable.
Well.
Psychopaths on the news every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this guy is not a psychopath. I'm changing the subject.
Excellent.
We have a new deer biologist in Indiana. Did you know that?
No.
His name is Mariah Bogus. B-O-G-G-E-S-S. Hmm. Or it's Bogus, mm-hmm. maybe. Joined the Indiana DNR in October as the new statewide deer biologist, a native of North Carolina. Mariah received his bachelor's degree from North Carolina State University and his master's degree through the Deer Ecology and Management Lab at Mississippi State University. Hmm. His master's thesis examined the effects of prescribed fire and deer on acorn survival and plant communities. Mariah has a keen interest in the interrelationships of habitat management, plant communities, and wildlife populations. He is an avid deer hunter and enjoys shed hunting. That means looking for shed antlers, hiking, foraging, reading, and writing in his free time. Mariah is stationed at the DNR Fish and Wildlife's Bloomington field office. So welcome to Bloomington, Mariah, and sure hope that you enjoy your time here and are able to help us out. Welcome to Indiana.
Yeah, I'll see if we can find him.
Job.
Yeah, I was going to call him before this show, but I didn't get around to it. But I will call him and see if I can get him to come on with us and talk about deer here maybe next week or the week after. Who knows?
That would be
great. He's probably pretty busy. He's pretty busy right now.
Yeah. I got two other pieces of DNR information if anybody's interested.
Sure,
let's hear it.
I know it's a topic that is of interest to you, Rich, and I kind of looked it up. So the qualifications for being a DNR officer, there's a few physical qualifications, the usual thing. I think you need to do 24 sit-ups in a minute and, physical things like that. But for education requirement, it is to have an associate degree or to have 60 hours towards a bachelor's degree, or to have 4 years of military service.
Really?
So when you we talked about this before, why, that Rich, I think, points out that these guys don't look like Andy Griffith anymore. They look like military people. Well, that's because they are. And that's who the DNR is selecting. And, it's a requirement to be selected for one of those jobs.
Well, that was an or have military experience, right?
Or, exactly.
That's the same thing with the carry license for a firearm, and the same for a hunting license.
Yep.
To get past your hunter education course, if you are a military veteran,
they get a pass.
You theoretically had plenty of firearms training.
Right.
Yeah.
I know I did. I don't know if everybody gets the same training, but pretty much you go to basic training, you learn how to shoot a rifle and handle it safely. But, you probably don't have everybody that's in the military doesn't have in-depth knowledge of the firearm, especially of a pistol, which is what these guys all carry.
Yep.
So, yeah, and the whole military invasion of law enforcement in this country actually began when Clinton was president, and has pretty much spread throughout the whole country in all levels of police agencies. And I can see how it happened, and I know that it did happen, but when you're confronted with it as a citizen, you're not really ready for it. No, I mean, you got a guy that was kicking down doors in Afghanistan, and now he's at your house.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's something that needs to be rethought, and I think it goes back to training. You know, I think it's a great idea probably to have, you know, people that need to carry a gun who may be shot at. Military experience probably is useful, but that doesn't mean that they need to be trained that way to be police officers.
That's true.
Having that experience is good, but to hone that skill against American citizens is probably not what anybody really envisions at this point.
Well, you go ahead, Rich.
Well, I was just going to say that the thing about war, as we all know, any of us that have been in war, as well as someone who's watched a Band of Brothers or something, is that you're guilty until proven innocent in war. You go in with the attitude of there's a problem here, and whereas with a police officer, it's supposed to be sort of the opposite, like where you're trying to help things along and make sure things don't happen. You're not going in looking. You know, you're not going in with the idea that these people are guilty. And I think that's part of the problem, too. And when I talked to Dan Bortner when he was on our show back in August, he's the new DNR chief. You know, we ended up talking about this just slightly. And he wouldn't really answer the question, which is, I was saying, why can't we have some sort of training that gets into the idea of what the difference is, and especially with DNR, the conservation officer, that, you know, they're there to help things along and not necessarily just be a policeman about everything. And we, part of the reason that Alan and I were talking about this was he posted a little video that the DNR had put up about, one of their officers and what he did every day. And it was basically, all they showed was him, you know, tracking down, you know, violations. And it wasn't so much like, and it used to be, hey, you'd just have a conversation. Hey, are you catching anything today or whatever? I would have loved to have seen something like that in the video rather than, you know, here's, take this breathalyzer test, you know, or whatever, you know. And I understand that they have to do those things and they deal with those problems and everything, but, you know, it just seems like they should be taught differently than you're going to be taught in the military.
Well, the big change came when they gave the conservation officers state police powers.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, they used to be called game wardens. Somehow that became a derogatory term for them.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot of those older game wardens who didn't mind being called game wardens. Some of them were very nice people, and it's like Rich just said, they would engage you in conversation if they ran into you out in the woods someplace, and you know, you didn't feel threatened.
Right.
I've been approached by game wardens in many different states, and never once. Well, maybe once asked for a look at my license, but mostly just like, how are you doing? Or just waving at me from across the river when I was fishing in Michigan, or talking to me at a pullout in Wyoming. A nice, good feeling after you talk to them. I can't say that that's the case so much anymore. After you talk to one, you feel like you've just been examined for your possibilities as a perpetrator.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and another
care for that.
Another thing on that video that I thought was interesting was on the back of his jacket, flak jacket or whatever he had on, it said police. And you know, I don't think they're police. Is that legal? It just seems...
Yeah, they are police.
I guess they are now.
Most certainly are, yeah.
They most certainly are. They're state police. They have actually more power than the state police, and at least in some states, once you buy a hunting or a fishing license, you've signed away your right for them to have a search warrant to enter your home.
Right.
And there's been several cases in Montana, I know, involving wolves, where the conservation officers have entered people's homes and confiscated evidence of their wrongdoing without search warrants. So no other policeman has that power.
Right.
No, I think the same is true with the boating license as well. I think you signed.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Because they randomly just pull people over. If a policeman were to do that on the streets, you'd probably have your lawyer intervene very quickly from just being randomly stopped for no reason. But the conservation officers do, in fact, have that right.
Well, they get to have random alcohol checks. They announce them all the time. Yep. They get to put up roadblocks and stop you for no reason.
Right.
Yep. So, yep. I think that some of our constitutional freedoms and guarantees are no longer and have not been for some time.
For some time. My second point on the DNR was evidently over the 4th of July weekend, there's something called Operation Wet Dry or Dry Wet.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the local Bloomington officers, DNR officers, was cited nationally for being of value during that period of time for either the number of stops he made or whatever it was. And I believe he made, over those three weekends, he made 75 stops of boats. He contacted 150 people, so roughly two people per boat. He wrote, I believe, in the neighborhood of a dozen citations for different things, gave six or eight warnings for alcohol use, and arrested six people and took them to jail for drunk driving in a boat. So it really gives you a good picture of what these guys do kind of on three weekends here on Lake Monroe in the summertime. I thought it was pretty interesting. They list the number of things that they do, including, you know, obviously boating education, alcohol education, you know, all the things that you can be cited for, essentially, as what this conservation officer did during these three weekends,
well,
during his contact with people.
I've had actually... I can't really count the number of people who have told me that they sold their boat. They quit because they were harassed so much when they took their boat to Lake Monroe in particular. Patoka should be experiencing the same kind of treatment, but apparently not. I don't hear that from people down there. Maybe it's not as crowded, but I know it's pretty crowded on these big weekends. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why it's this bad in Lake Monroe. Now, if I lived up around, you know, in Indianapolis and there was lots of bad people around, well, maybe you might expect that a little more. But I've been on the Eagle Creek Reservoir many times and never seen a game warden.
No.
You know? A conservation officer, I'm sorry. I don't quite get it. Are we being picked on here? Yes, maybe. Why? Because we're known as a liberal county, even though we're not. The city of Bloomington would have to be considered liberal, but the county is not. It's about middle of the road, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know, I mean, there are so many visitors here. You know, I'm sure that's plays part of that, Don. You know, we are have the highest rate of visitation of any lake. We are the biggest lake. All those things kind of go together. You know, I think your point is well taken. I've heard the same thing from people that I know who used to be boaters, used to come down here every weekend,
yes,
and they just got tired of it. They just said, yes, I just don't want to mess with that anymore. I got tired of it. It was no fun.
Well, I don't go down there anymore, even though I've got a boat, and I just don't want to go there and be subjected to this.
Yeah.
You know, I have all the necessary equipment. I'm a law-abiding citizen. You know, what do they want to stop me for? Well, they don't. I haven't been stopped in a long time.
Yeah.
But the last time I was stopped was back in the 70s. But a lot of people get stopped multiple times. Especially, now I can see their thinking on this. Anybody who comes out of Allen Creek in the summertime, where the party boats link up in there, I can see why they might check them.
Yep.
But for the just the general person out pleasure boating, you know, maybe skiing, I just don't get it.
Well, I think your point is well taken about Allen's Creek. I think we used to call that in the day a target-rich environment. you could wander up to any of those people and probably find violations. I don't know why you'd wait for them to drive away. But, you know, I was walking down on the beach in front of my house about, 2 years ago, and it was a fall day, but you know, late summer day. It wasn't real busy, but as I was walking along the beach in front of my house here, a DNR boat with two officers, one female and one male, comes rushing up to me at full speed. And I just waved at them and they pulled right up to me and stopped and said, you know, what are you doing down here? And I'm going, what am I doing down here? I live here. And the female officer said, where do you live? And I'm going, about house right up above me right there. And she looked up, and of course you can't really see it from the beach down below. You really need to be out in the lake to see my property. There was no cause, no reason to rush up to me, ask me what the hell I was doing down here.
Well, what did she say? Why did she say she stopped?
I didn't know there was a house up there. And I'm going, well, the stairway, as you can see right here, goes right up to it. So right. You know, I don't believe for 1 minute they don't know there's a house up here. My house has been here for 30 years. I don't know how bad of an observer you'd have to be on the lake every day and not see my house. So,
well, you know, why would they stop somebody who was just walking along the beach?
You tell me, Don. I mean, I'm still buffaloed as to why anybody would. I wasn't armed. I had my dog with me. I don't know where they thought that dog came from. I can tell you that's kind of related to what you were saying about people being stopped and being annoyed.
I'd say it's exactly the same kind of thing. It's beyond understanding. And I understand that the new director of the DNR avoided answering any questions about this or pretty much everything that was asked him.
Yeah.
And which reminds me of another thing, and that's the car top boat ramp, which, you know, I can understand why Buddy Bill is so upset about that, because I took a drive down around there here a couple weeks ago and looked at that thing again. And you know, if you're an older person, you've got to take your boat off of your truck or whatever and carry it through this tiny little break in the guardrail there that they put up, like you would see on an interstate highway, to keep people from putting their boat into the water at that place. Yeah. It was the only place where, an older couple or somebody who doesn't have a 20-foot bass boat with a 200-horse motor on it wants to put their boat in without being swamped by some big boat, you know, and hundreds of people at a boat ramp like we saw at Cutright this year. We saw 300 cars at down there that one weekend when the first good weekend we had when the weather got nice last spring. I'm mad with Bill too. I'm with Bill on this. There's just absolutely no reason for them to have done that, except they want to control everything and everybody. And we are in the police state, and this is 1984. And as somebody said on TV today, it's almost Orwellian. It may be Orwellian, meaning 1984. If you're not familiar with that book, you got to read it. That's it. I'm done with my sermon.
Well, I feel your pain, Don. I really do.
Hey, I got another topic to change to if you want.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, we've got, let me see, 1-2 minutes.
Well, I got one.
Three,
to read.
Actually.
This is how you want to get your deer tested for chronic wasting disease. Okay. Neurological fatal disease transmitted directly through bodily fluids such as feces, saliva, blood, or urine, indirectly through environmental contamination of soil, et cetera, et cetera. CWD is found in free-ranging white-tailed deer in several Midwestern states, including Michigan, Illinois, and Wisconsin, or surrounded. During three weekends in November, two already passed, then 21-22, it'll be next weekend, biologists will operate sampling stations to collect lymph nodes from deer harvested within the CWD surveillance area. Now, that's mostly in Jasper, Lake, LaPorte, Newton, Porter, Pulaski, Stark counties in northwest Indiana, DeKalb, LaGrange, Noble, and Steuben in northeast Indiana. You can, however, get your deer tested if you're not from one of those counties, if you get a hold of the DNR and ask them to do it. And you can get this information online at on.in.gov/CWD. Let me give that to you one more time. on.in.gov/CWD. And if you're concerned about it. Now, if you're in northern Indiana, you might be a little more concerned about it than we are. But, you know, if it ever gets here, it'll be here.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And they want their lymph nodes. Is that what they want, Don?
Right. That's what they said. They're collecting lymph nodes. So they used to collect the whole deer head.
Yeah. You know?
And they were checking their spinal fluids and things. But now it's the lymph nodes. They've honed their detection methods better, I suppose. So that's my 2 minutes.
Thanks. I appreciate that. That's good information.
Well, and with that, we're just about done with the show. I want to say that next week is Thanksgiving, so be careful out there. We're going to take the week off and come back at you right after Thanksgiving. So enjoy, have a great Thanksgiving, and be safe out there. Oh, I've been waiting for that for so long. All right. Thanks, Excellent. Alan. Thanks, Don. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show. If you're one of the many people who see WFHB as an essential part of life here in South Central Indiana, we hope you'll support us, especially now, by going online to wfhb.org and clicking on the big red donate button. We need you and appreciate you.